very unique and I think very exciting opportunity. I want to introduce Reb Bronstein a little bit and try and just describe, hopefully, what we're going to be able to do tonight. Reb Bronstein, aside from being a very old and good friend, is a very unique figure. A person who can really speak about tonight's topic in a very powerful way. Reb Bronstein has, to give a little bit of taste, has two works, two Sparim coming out in the next little bit. One is a volume of Shimo Shiurim, the Rav Shiurim Sefer Kiddushin. Very excited about that. And also, in partnership with Chabad, a sefer coming out in the photo of the Bab Zarev. A person who has just an amazing understanding of different approaches in the Torah world. A PhD in Talmud, a PhD in Gemara under Dr. Elman, an amazing sort of figure to hear from and to drawing from different personalities and the way that they all connect together. At the same time, to be a person who does so with so sweet and so nice and so humble, and really just a great opportunity for us to be able to learn from him. The format is going to be as follows. I'll be asking some questions. I'm going to try to focus primarily on Soloveitchik, Lubavitch Rebbe, in particular in terms of how they and then how we find our own unique path in Torah. We're learning a lot for Ezra Hashem this year, and one of the things that hopefully we're seeing is that there's Torah is very, very vast, and Torah is very, very broad, and there's a lot to be able to learn, and it's important to find our own Tela a little bit. So I'll be asking some questions. We'll have the opportunity to hear from Rabbi Bronstein. I will, I guess, ask the first question the following way. Hopefully it can be very engaging for you. I know it will be. I know it will be for me. To what extent, I guess, the first question, and then we'll switch places, I guess. But to what extent do different Gedolei Yisrael, in particular, we'll speak about the Rav and the Lav Terebi figure, but also whoever it is else that you would like to speak about, to what extent did they specialize in learning? Were there areas where they were better? Did they have weaknesses? Were there areas in their learning that they were not focusing on that much? And to what extent did they maybe share certain overlap in their learning? So in terms of understanding their own unique perspectives. Did Lubavitch Rebbe specialize in certain areas of Torah, the Din of Soloveitchik? And did they also maybe even neglect certain areas of Torah also?
First of all, thank you so much, Rabbi Tversky, for inviting me to come. Thank you, everybody else, for being here. And for sure, everybody here. And it's really a plus to be able to be here at the invitation of Rabbi Tversky. And let's feel like this is a continuation of the conversations we had in the YU Center 10 years ago, just now in front of 100 people. So thank you for that opportunity. And also, I think if you want to take questions in the crowd, also. So in terms of the three people, and also Rishos Rabbi Max, in terms of the three people Rabbi Tversky mentioned, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Kook, and Lubavitch Rebbe, I think one of the unique things about the three of them, and one of the reasons I was attracted to the three of them, was that they were extremely broad in their Torah learning. I think all of them were experts in Shas and Poskim. Rav Kook, who was the most known for all Machshava, his students say when he would walk around the Shkader, Shibar Kazarav, it was called the Kazarav then, it's called the Shibar Kazitovit, and he would ask people what Sukkot they were doing, and he would recite the entire Sukkot Shabbat. Lubavitch Rebbe had a vast knowledge of Shas and Poskim, to the extent that the one of our regular, Rav Soloveitchik went to in the 1970s, he walked away commenting to the student who was driving him, it's amazing how many sources the Lubavitch Rebbe was able to quote from Baal Peh without any notes in front of him. He just remembered things, he had a photographic memory. And Rav Soloveitchik, as we all know, in addition to his focus on Lamdas and Gemara, was a big bucky in Jewish philosophy in general. Even the Sefer Chasidus, the Torah, he quotes Rabbi Nachman sometimes in his footnotes of some of his essays. We're talking about extremely broad people. But the question is, were there certain parts of Torah they specialized in, and other parts that they just perforce have less time or less interest in learning? I think the answer is definitely yes. It's impossible to specialize in everything. Rav Soloveitchik self-defined, this is based on his own and his own self-description, the description of his students, as Malamed, as somebody who primarily wanted to impart a certain methodology of Gemara learning, certain hashivas of Gemara learning, or certain hashivas of halakha to his students. We'll talk a little bit more about what the environment was like in America when he came in. He started teaching Gemara on a high level. It was unheard of in America at the time. People thought that type of Gemara learning was on its way out. And Rav Soloveitchik mainly self-defined in that way. To the extent that you have people who are in his shir for 20, 25 years, will tell you they hardly ever heard him quote a philosophical source. They hardly ever heard him quote anything from Sefer Chasidus. Why is that? Rav Soloveitchik knew all these things. He knew Christian theology, he knew Chasidus, but he didn't make it a focus of his shir. Because he primarily wanted to impart a certain type of Gemara learning to his students, and that's what he focused on himself, now was his Masorah. The Baal Meshech Rebbe came from the opposite perspective. His father was a community rabbi, his father was a poskim, his father knew Shas poskim. He knew Shas poskim. If you go through Kuntias Yitzchok, you go through the Torah that he said, it's primarily coming from a different, canon. It's primarily coming from other Makoros. He focused much more on Sefer Chasidus and Sefer Kabbalah. Gemara is there. It's a Chiddush of Gemara is there. It's a Chiddush how many Sufis he went through in Nigla, in his Yitzchok, in his talks, in his teachings. But the primary focus is definitely Chasidus. And we can discuss why in a couple of minutes. Rav Kook, again, all over the map, a post-day, but Rav Kook himself, in his own diary, Shmona Katzin, in his diary, because he didn't expect anybody to read, and were published 50 years after he died. You go to his letters, you can take out the book called Shmona Katzin, I'm sure it's there. These are Rav Kook's personal diaries, personal spiritual notebooks, that from which the published writings are called. But he had no idea people would get their hands on that, people would be publishing that. There are tons of passages there in the first person. Rav Kook talking about his own spiritual journey, his own spiritual struggles. Rav Kook writes, Hashem gave me talents in Tikva. Hashem gave me talents in Chas Poskim. Therefore, I have to use them. But if it was up to me, I would study Kabbalah all day. I would meditate all day. And he has to force himself to learn Chas Poskim because he feels like it's part of his role as a man in Israel. But in terms of specializing, in terms of what his orientation was, in terms of what he's more interested in doing, certainly Kabbalah, Chasidus, Jewish mysticism, spirituality, it goes without saying.
As these different figures specialize in different areas, what do you think led them to make the choice to learn one over the other? Presumably they all walk into a mixed metric. The same way that many of us walk into a base measure, and there's lots of different charm in there. And how do you choose what to take off the shelf and what to learn? What do you think influenced the Rav, the Rebbe, and choosing which path to take?
Thank you. I can answer either with the PhD or the rabbi. If you ask me as somebody who studies history, why was Soloveitchik focused on Gemara and why did Baba Rebbe focus on Chasidus? The answer is pretty clear. They all grew up in rabbinic homes in Eastern Europe. One did Rav Soloveitchik learn from his father? You know what he says? The only thing he learned until he was 10, 11 years old. What did he grow up on? He grew up on Shas and Rambam. He said that every night his father would give a shiur to a small guru in his house. He would be sitting there on the stairs. This depiction is at the end of the book, and from there he shall see. It's a beautiful depiction having Torah in the home. Now, the influence of young children. Soloveitchik writes about how he thought Rambam was alive. He thought Rambam was his father's friend as a young child. He didn't even know that Rambam was a historical figure for 800 years in the past. And as Soloveitchik got older, he was then exposed himself to other forms of writing. As a teenager, without telling his parents, he would go to the local library, take out books, hide them under his bed. And he was a curious teenager, he was a genius, and he wanted to read, wanted to know, and eventually his parents found out about it, and they started giving him a secondary education. One of his elementary school teachers was in the Baal Meshech Chasid, so through that, he was introduced to the basic ideas of the Baal Meshech Chasid. But by and large, his upbringing, his family upbringing, which he kept his entire life, was Shasta Boskin. It doesn't mean they didn't sit back and think about it at one point in his life and say, why are Shasta Boskin? Why is Halakha? Why is the Bar B'Iyun? Why has that been the mainstay of the Shiva curriculum for generations? And why should I make that my life's love? Why should I make that the main topic of my teaching? He writes about it. If anybody's read Halachic Man, or if anybody's read one of Soloveitchik's students, his essay, Why Learn Gemara, there's a whole philosophy behind it, because our main relationship with Hashem is Eved to Melech, and how they manifest namely through the learning of Halacha. And when we learn Gemara, we're able to understand what our obligations are as an Eved to a Melech. And yes, we are also a child of the king, a child who knows relate to Hashem as a father, who relate to Hashem as a spouse. But all of those things are secondary to the primary definition of Eved to Melech. This is what Rebbe writes based on our salvation philosophy. And that's why Halakha and Gemara, where Halakha is formed, that is the main part of the curriculum. So it's partially upbringing and partially based on philosophy. The Baal Meshach Rebbe, similarly, he grew up as a Chabad husband. His father was a Chabad rabbi of some town in Ukraine that I can't pronounce. One of those towns where you look it up in three different places on the internet, you'll get three different, radically different spellings of what the name of the town is. I can't pronounce it politely. But his father was the Chabad rabbi of the town. He passed shilohs, he learned Nigla, he made sure his children learned Nigla. But by and large, his father was a mystic. His father was a Makobo, his father learned Chassidus. Therefore, the Baal Meshach Rebbe also was a Chabad Chassid. Chassidus is going to be very important. But it doesn't mean he never sat back and reflected, why is Chassidus important? In 1968, I think it was, he gave a speech, he gave a test case for Shana Bar Chassidus, which he said is going to be my explanation of why Chassidus, particularly Chabad Chassidus, is the most important, the most central, the most concentrated form of God that we have in this world, in terms of Torah. It's called Contrast the Yamash of Chassidus. It's a question, and it starts off saying, the starting question is, why is Chassidus so important? And he goes on for pages to describe why Chassidus is so important. So again, it's partially based on upbringing, and partially based on thinking it through, reflecting, understanding the importance of Chassidus. But Rav Kook also, Rav Kook was all the way back. I mean, his father is from Lushin, his mother was from a Chabad family. He learned in Lushin at the same time. There's a great story about Rav Kook, which Rav Yitzchak Persky has in his biography of Rav Kook. Rav Kook was learning in Volozhin. Ostensibly, he was learning Gemara 16 hours a day. And in Volozhin, at the time, there were a lot of Maskeva. There were a lot of people that were reading secular literature in a study. So there was one student, Rav Reuven Ben Yis, who became head of the Haredi later on, who noticed that at night, at 2, 3 in the morning, Rav Kook would go to a side room, take out some papers when nobody was looking, read the papers, put them away, and then go to sleep. So Reuven Ben Yis, was Bakar at the time, went over to the Rashidu, went over to the Nzid, and said, you think our Mitzvah Kok is a tzaddik? You're sending students who have shaylos and emuna to him to talk to him. He's a welfare. He's reading secular literature. He's doing something or 2, 3 in the morning, he thinks nobody else is looking. The Nzid said, take it easy. This person is a tzaddik, he's tar, and we continue sending people to him. One day, Rav Ben Yis looked at those papers after Rav Kook went to sleep. Anybody want to guess what was on those papers? Shemos of Hashem. Different configurations we have to keep up with. As a 17-year-old boy, Rav Kook was learning Gemara 16 hours a day, but at night, when he thought nobody was looking, he was meditating on Shemos of Hashem. Rav Kook's upbringing was all over the map. Nigla and Nistar all together, and he developed a philosophy that as you get closer to Mashiach, you have to integrate all of these things, you have to learn more Nistar, learn more Chassidus, learn more Kabbalah, and that becomes more important as you go on. So again, partially upbringing, and partially thinking about it, and coming up with an ideology.
If I can shift gears for a moment to something a bit more personal, maybe. What have you spent the time in Gush and NYU. I get how that leads a person to learn the writings of the book. But at some point, you spent time in Merkas Harav learning Torah book. And at some point, you end up getting enough into Chabad Chassidus own sort of time in yeshiva, trying to figure out, you know, which spark you were going to take off this spark shell. What led you sort of like break away a little bit from what was probably the most natural place of just exclusively Torah of Sal Eitrek? It's the world of Cook on the one hand and the world of Abbas Rebbe on the other hand.
It's a good question. I'm not exactly sure, but if I could reconstruct my 18-year-old self, it was basically the language I was trying to describe. When I first came to Israel for Shana Aleph, I was interested in learning Gemara. That was my upbringing. Anybody ever read El Enchanted? No, it's a girl's book. You don't have to admit it, it's okay. And El Enchanted is about a princess who has a curse of obedience. Whatever somebody tells her to do, she does. And she has to go through life with a curse of obedience. Which, you know, generally speaking, is a good thing, but sometimes, obviously, when people get wind of it, they can make a strange things. So I was born with a curse of obedience. It was a blessing at a young age. I was a goody goody. My father is a rabbi, everybody knows him. My parents are amazing people, my rabbi are amazing people. Gemara, halakha, was the type of Torah I was taught, and that was the type of Torah I was into at that age. When I got to Israel, and it could be you're experiencing this as well. For the first time, I started hearing serious shiurim in machshava. And it wasn't just something that I was intellectually interested in. It was sophisticated, it was a type of Torah that I had never heard before. But it was also something that was touching me in a different way. It was, you know, I think the way of putting it was that if somebody had asked me before, when I was coming into Shana Aleph, why I wanted to spend, you know, however many hours a day you spend in Shana Aleph learning Gemara, 10 hours a day learning Gemara, I'm not sure if I would have had an articulate answer as to why. I knew it was something I wanted to do. I knew it was a good thing to do. I knew it was something that good Jewish boys did. I was interested in it. I was connected to it. I was invested in doing it. But I'm not sure if I would have been able to give an articulate answer as to why. What I started realizing after hearing a lot of Torah from our folk, and from trying to find myself older Israelis to learn our folk with me and to learn other sacred chassidus, is that there actually are svarim that deal with these questions directly. There actually are ideas. There actually are books. They don't just tell you what to do with the foundations of halakha. Tell you have to do that because we're connected to a meta, which is one level, which is great. But they actually give as opposed to most of the Goli Yisrael and the Goli Hasidus, didn't write the first person. Rav Kook Mamish kept the spiritual diary. You could trace the development of Rav Kook as a person, his struggles, his ups and his downs, what he's experiencing day to day. By going through parts of Shmuel Vatzin, and there are books that have called out the first person passages, and it's a fascinating, fascinating read. It's amazing to think that such a person existed 100 years ago. He just lived life in a different spiritual life. He lived life filled with spiritual experiences. He connected to God on a regular basis, the way that I can only aspire to. But even though it's on such a different level, the very he wanted to learn Gemara. Why should those types of questions? The more I learned about from a cup and from a cook, and I tried to mention a little bit of Hasidus, the more and more interested in these questions I became. There's some people that they're fine. I have some friends that are totally fine with straight Gemara grammar. That's great. There's other people are going to look for that framework to understand why they're living a life in Bodas Hashem, why Shiras is most important, why Gemara Gemara is important. And the answers to those questions, by and large, are going to be in Sifrei Machshava.
Maybe there's one final question. We have people who learn in different ways and have different influences. So clearly, let's say, the way that Rav Sal Eitrek lived his life was very different than the way the Rav Trevi lived his life. In a certain sense, what their goals were, sending out shlichim all over the world, or teaching, I guess in a more narrow sense, maybe. To what extent is like their unique place in Torah that influenced the way they lived their lives. The choice that they made for, you know, you have to go to Israel, but choose what are they going to do in this world. And Rav Trevi made certain choices, Salvation made other choices in terms of the way he was going to be a Matne, a leader. To what extent did their unique area or their unique thing like the Torah influence the choices they made and how they were going to influence the Jewish people?
Thank you. That's a good question. My understanding is that the two things are totally intertwined. Again, Rav Salvation received the Masorah, Gemara, and Halakha, and that was the main Masorah he wanted to pass on to his students. If you think about the impact he had on the American candidate, it was mainly in this period. From Jonathan Sacks, who's coming from England, coming from the outside, and therefore might have like a different, might have almost a better perspective than some of us who are growing up in America. He says he met Rav Salvation twice. Rav Salvation is a graduate student in philosophy in 1967, I think 68. Then again, much later on, when he was a candidate, when he was a candidate for Chief Rabbi. He said, in order to understand the chiddush of Rav Salvation, why Jonathan Sarna, the preeminent American historian of American Jewish history, said it's hard to overestimate the impact Rav Salvation had on Jewish life in America. It's a pretty sound thing. It's hard to overestimate the impact he had. Then Rav Salvation points out that in the 1960s, people thought halakha was not going to be a major part of Jewish culture going forward. The bookstore's words sound like halakha. The book, the ethicists, the theologians were not talking about halakha. The GTS, the conservative movement, was on the rise. The reform movement was on the rise. How many people were learning Ice Seder in YU in the 1950s? I mean, 13 people, 14 people? The Sefer was empty. Lakewood had just started, the first group of all people. People heard our color was crazy, thinking we could recreate a European yeshiva on American soil. But as Zach said, that was the 1950s. And that was even true into the 60s when he first met Rav Salvation. But he said, by the 1990s, he wrote this in a eulogy he had for Rav Salvation. He said his American publishers, his American marketing people are telling him, if you don't have the word halakha in the book that's marketing for the Orthodox community, nobody's going to buy it. You have to have the word halakha there somewhere. He said, who created this revolution? Why are people sitting down and learning Gemara, Rambam, Sos, and Sivos? It's all because that Rav Salvation discussed. He wrote a book, Halakha Man, in the 1940s to describe a halakhic personality. And he described a halakhic personality as like the hero of America. You want authenticity. You want somebody who's brave, who's courageous. So you want somebody who's autonomous. You want somebody who's active, not passive. You have to learn and keep halakha. And Rav Salvation's whole goal in writing this book, when he writes himself, just teaching day after day, student after student, Gemara and Halakha, was that this is the bread and butter of Judaism, and therefore that has to be the major impact that we have on the community. So I think our Saxon's eulogy, it's in a book called Memories of a Giant, it's like a bunch of anthology of eulogies people gave from Salvation, and that's where you can find that. He just points out that he is an outsider, it's almost that they're better able to appreciate what Rav Salvation did than those people who are living in America. The Babashir, I mean, This is God willing. This is going to be one of the themes of this book. The God willing is coming out at some point. Is that you look at Chabad? When you think of Chabad, you think of program. You think of Shlubim. You think of Chabad houses. You think of CT. You think of all these amazing programs that the Babish Rebbe initiated and ran. And he was probably the best manager, the best program director, the best initiator of programs that the Orthodox Judaism has seen in centuries. Who else did on the ground, in terms of the programs, what the Babashir Rebbe did? But if you only look at the results and the programs that he created, you're only going to get a surface level understanding of what he was after. If you read the Sikhs, if you read the talks, if you read the Torah, what do you realize? All these programs is a kotsal apoah, is an actualization of the Zohar, of Sifrei Kabbalah, of Sifrei Hasidus. That his understanding of all these books, of all these scholars were telling him that this generation, post-World War II generation, 1950s and on, Dafka in America, we have to do these things. And every program he had, it wasn't just all your Jews who need us because they don't know about Torah and Judaism. That was one level. And that's there. And that's the next level everybody can understand. But if you read the sikos he was giving to the Chabad Hasidim, good point. There's a line in the Zohar, there's a line in the Tanya, there's a line in the Arizal that is telling us that as you get closer to Mashiach, particularly in the deepest parts of Galus, you have to do X, Y, and Z. And that's why we have to initiate these programs. That's why we most have these programs, because we're fulfilling what it says in the sacred Kabbalah and Hasidus from 400 to 500 to 600 1,000 years ago. So the question is, did the type of Torah they learned, specialized, and impact where they wanted to influence the world? And then the answer is definitely not the case.
I'd like to very much thank my Rossi for I hope everybody has a wonderful rest of the night. If you've done this,